Just a few days after Christmas, our family, our little family, me, Kim, Solomon, and Lydia, were gathered together in the living room, and the tree was still up and lit. All of our decorations were still, out. All of our presents were kind of scattered across the floor, and we noticed Solomon walk over by the Christmas tree. And he's kind of looking around, looking under the tree, looking behind the couch where we had hidden some of his presents. And then he says to Kim, "Are there any more presents, Mama?" And Kim said, "No, Solomon, we opened up all the presents." And then he looked at her and said, "Shall we go get some more presents?" In other words, is that all? Is that all? His words give voice to, I think, the condition of the human heart. An insatiable desire for more and more. No matter how good something seems to be, and I thought we gave him everything he could have ever wanted for Christmas. No matter how good we think things are, our hearts always desire more. We're always left unsatisfied, and it happens in almost every area of our lives. Material possessions, food, relationships, sex. Our hearts are filled with ideal dreams that are almost impossible to meet. And we are left asking, is that all? There has to be more to life than this. Jesus steps into a world in which our deepest longings are not being met. Some of those deepest longings are simply the wrong dreams to begin with, dreams that are grossly disfigured by sin. But some of our longings are righteous and just, good and beautiful. And in both cases, we all ask, is that all? This story about the wedding at Cana gives us a preview to that answer. Jesus turns water into wine. The gospel writer in verse 11 calls it a sign, Jesus' first sign. And the other gospel writers would call such a feat a miracle. But John wants to avoid the temptation to focus on the power of a miracle, and instead wants us to ask the question, what does this sign point to? What does it mean? And these signs that are recorded by John point to the death and resurrection of Jesus. That is the moment when God's glory will be fully revealed. Now, the signs that lead up to that also reveal God's glory, but not fully. They give us little glimpses that point us to what Jesus calls his hour of glory. But as readers, we don't encounter the hour of glory until the end of the book. So I think to help us along the way, as we encounter these signs that Jesus gives, John gives us a frame of reference at the very beginning of the gospel account. What does this sign at Cana point to? We could back up to John 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John begins his account by telling us that in the person of Jesus Christ, God has indeed come down to us. He is the long-awaited, promised Messiah who will redeem God's people and reveal God's full glory. The Word became flesh and as Eugene Peterson translates it, moved into the neighborhood. And he is full of grace and truth. Full. That's the backdrop for this story, which begins by telling us that on the third day, there was a wedding at Cana of Galilee. And the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus was also invited along with his disciples. Now, in the Jewish culture, the occasion of a wedding was a huge deal. It wasn't just for the immediate family or even just close personal friends. A lot of times it was for the entire town. A lot of time was spent making preparations, and the actual wedding celebration lasted 7 days. And they really knew how to celebrate. The feasting was done with lots of wine. Wine was seen as one of God's great gifts. It symbolized extravagant joy. And it's easy to see why the wedding banquet is the primary image of the messianic age when all things will be restored. Eternal life in God's kingdom is filled with joy and abundance. But we quickly find out that at this particular wedding banquet, there is a crisis at hand. The wine gave out. And to run out of wine at the wedding banquet was a terrible thing. It would cast eternal shame on the entire family and would be a bad omen for the future of this newly married couple. If wine was a symbol of extravagant joy and it ran out at the wedding banquet, then that doesn't bode well for the future of this marriage. It doesn't bode well for how long the extravagant joy in this marriage will last. Now, the next few moments could be disastrous. It could ruin the whole celebration. Is anyone going to step in and save the family from this embarrassing situation? When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." Now, why would Mary feel the need to tell this to Jesus? Because up to this point, Jesus hasn't done any signs or miracles to warrant her request, if that's what it is. John doesn't tell us exactly what Mary's motives are, but Jesus seems to interpret her statement as a request for him to step in. And he says in response, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." And his response sounds pretty cold. I noticed that when I read it the first time, I heard some snickers from probably some mothers whose, you know, if we read it a certain way, it would break a mother's heart to hear her son, you know, talk to her that way. "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me?" It sounds kind of rude and derogatory to call his own mother woman. But I found out that it's actually just a figure of speech. Jesus isn't being harsh or disrespectful. Instead, he's setting some new boundaries in their relationship. He's saying to Mary, "God is my authority, and I need to listen and obey him above any human authority, even my own mother." And he at first doesn't do what Mary asks because his hour has not yet come. God has not required his action yet. The cross and the empty tomb still are a ways ahead on the road. And how does Mary respond? She simply turns to the servants and says, "Do whatever he tells you. Do whatever he tells you." She submits herself to the will of her son. She doesn't demand anything of Jesus. She respects his independence from her. But she also doesn't take his response as a direct refusal. Instead, she makes room for Jesus to do something by telling the servants to do whatever he tells them. She makes room for him. Now, Mary has become accustomed to making room in her life for Jesus. She made room for him in her womb when the angel first appeared to her and told her that that she would bear God's son, the Messiah. And like any mother, she has been making room for him ever since. And in this way, she takes on the role of the model disciple. Her response, typically, both when the angel appeared to her and now here at the wedding in Cana, is one of expectant faith. Do whatever he tells you, she says. Then the narrator turns our attention to 6 stone water jars, which were used for the Jewish rites of purification. They each held between 20 and 30 gallons. And the water in these jars would have probably been used to clean hands and food that were impure, stained with sin. And according to the purity laws, this water would have restored whatever was thought to be unclean. The ritual would have made what was blemished whole, or at least would have made it acceptable in God's eyes. So here's these 6 stone water jars. And remember the crisis at this wedding. The wine has run out. The extravagant joy symbolized in the wine is empty. And when our attention is turned to the stone water jars used in a ritual meant to be restorative, they are empty too. Most of the commentaries I read on this passage say that these stone water jars represent our human attempts to make things right. But we just can't do it. And when we rely on ourselves or an empty ritual, we find out that our wine has run out and we have no way to restore it. So there we sit. We've drunk our wine and we've used our water for purification, and now both are empty, both have run out. And Jesus steps into this situation. He tells the servants, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. He said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. The steward tasted it. He didn't know where it had come from. The servants who drew the water knew, but they didn't tell anyone that this wine had come from Jesus. So the steward is surprised and a little confused. He calls the bridegroom over and says to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first, and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk. But you have kept the good wine until now." Richard Bauckham, who is a New Testament scholar in Scotland, calls this line from the chief steward the punchline of the story. It's the line that helps the reader make sense of this whole thing. This sign points us to a surprising thing that God has done. This sign, normally we would expect the best wine to be served first, but God has saved the best for last. God's best gift wasn't the land promised to Abraham. God's best gift wasn't the law given to Moses. Those things don't fully reveal God's glory or give us lasting joy. They, like a sign, give us a preview of that glory, which is fulfilled in the person of Christ. He is our inheritance. He is the fulfillment of the law. Paul himself even talks about the rituals and festivals being shadows of the things to come. At the wedding in Cana, Jesus announces through this sign that God is doing something new. He will bring extravagant joy and purification to God's people in a whole new way. As Jesus says later in chapter 10, "I have come that they might have life and have it abundantly." The Word made flesh is full of grace and truth, and he has come that we may have that same abundance. How can we have that? How can we have that abundance? When we constantly chase after the wrong dreams which leave us empty, And when we chase after the right dreams, we are still often left feeling disappointed. Mary gives us the model. When the crisis came and there was no more wine, she submitted to Jesus. Even though her relationship to him was very special, she submitted to the Word made flesh. She made space for him to act, and she waited with expectant faith. If you feel unsatisfied with your life, I want to challenge you to respond like Mary. Submit, make room, and have faith. First, acknowledge that it is Jesus alone who fulfills life. He is the one who we turn to when we are out of joy. And so it is to him who we submit. And we submit not by making demands of him, but by approaching him with our request and accepting his timing. And after presenting our request, we must make room. Do whatever he tells you, is what Mary said. And you can pretty much guarantee that whatever Jesus tells you is going to be different than the way that you would do it yourself. When something is broken in our lives, we can't try to fix it by doing the same exact thing that we've done in the past that has led to our brokenness. And we can't expect that this brokenness will just fix itself over time. The new wine, this new wine that Jesus brings, is the best wine. We must be ready for Jesus to tell us to try a new way. He is the new way. And finally, wait with expectant faith. Mary didn't know how Jesus would intervene. She didn't know when Jesus would intervene, but she had faith that he would intervene. Do whatever he tells you, was said with expectant faith. The transformation from water to wine didn't happen until after that faith was expressed. Expectant faith. Then the last verse, verse 11. Jesus did this, the first of his signs in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. As we read these signs that John has recorded for us, and as we witness signs of God's kingdom in our world and in our own lives, may we, like the disciples, like Mary, even like the servants who obeyed Jesus, may we also believe in him. These signs reveal glimpses of God's glory. And those glimpses, if we, like Mary, submit to God, if we make room, and if we have faith, they will lead to a stronger belief in God. And that is what John wants us to have. That is why John has given us this book and these signs. And that is why Jesus has come, to give us a faith in him, to give us life to the full. Amen.